Back Talk is an extension of the long-running, award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, this podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
I'm John DeSando.
And I'm Mary Urena.
And this is Back Talk. Mary, one of the most delightful times I had by myself traveling was going to Weymouth in the Dorset section of England and sitting by the seaside and just enjoying typical, boy, it's just experience. I didn't even know anything about Littlehampton, which is in Sussex. And boy, do I now. Now, there's a film out there that only you and I would be reviewing. I'll bet there's nobody else in the country that's doing this one. Wicked Little Letters. Set it up for me.
So this takes place, as John said, in Littlehampton, Sussex, England, in 1920.
You're right.
So somewhere. We are post the Great War. There's been, as a result, great changes in society, including the use of less genteel language coming out of the war and more immigrants settling in the port towns of Great Britain. And so we have these two neighbors, Edith and Rose, who, when Rose moves in, initially become friends, but then they have a falling out that leads to Edith receiving poison pen letters that
it sounds like you're indicting Rose.
They are believed to be from Rose.
she has a good potty mouth. So
she does. She's an Irish immigrant portrayed by Jessie Buckley. And she is a woman before her time in terms of her independence and use of colorful language.
And let me interject here that we're somewhere in the suffragette movement, aren't we?
We are. This is at the time where the suffragettes are beginning to gather steam politically in the UK. And again, there's this decade of the 1920s was a period of upheaval coming out of the war and with the women's suffragette movement and immigration and all of those things. So there's a lot of change happening in society. And Edith and her family.
Olivia Colman. This woman can do anything. But play Doughty, she really can.
Yes. And so Edith's family is much more of the old school, cut from the old cloth, prim, very proper, at least in terms of appearances. And her parents are played by Timothy Spall and Gemma Jones.
Yeah, and Timothy Spall is one of my favorite. I learned about him through Glee's movies.
Through the Harry Potter movies.
Oh, right. Thank you. Yeah. But in this one, he's completely objectionable. There's nothing endearing about this dad.
In fact, it's somewhat one note.
Yeah, right.
But he turns out to be a very oppressive, short-tempered, abusive father.
Yeah, he is maybe an over-the-top emblem of the paternalistic society that these poor women had to put up with. Good Lord. Thank God for the women in town who don't quite believe that Rose will be the one who's sending the letter.
Yeah, it's actually a funny portrayal of the subculture of Edith's and Rose's friends and their true nature of banding together and wanting to protect their friends, but also you sense that it's their way of breaking out of the post-Victorian era, but still very restrictive society as it relates to women.
You know, as we're describing it, as you are so carefully describing it, someone who hadn't seen the movie, didn't know much about the movie, would think it was loaded thematically, these high-end topics. And I don't think it is at all. Do you?
If you watch the trailer, you get the sense that the film is about just these constant hijinks of who wrote the letters and who's receiving the letters and what the letters say. Yes. In fact, there are long stretches where a lot of serious themes are introduced that aren't necessarily resolved. I've mentioned the abusive father.
Yeah.
And you've mentioned the suffragette movement at the time, but there's also the role of women. A woman police constable, Gladys Moss.
And they call her, she's a WPO.
Yes.
They call her that. They don't call her by her name.
Yeah.
She's a woman police officer.
Woman police officer.
And a very good role.
Yes, a very good role. And the whole issue of women in the workplace and being abused in the workplace and disrespected in the workplace is brought up. Women having children out of wedlock is brought up. So there's a lot of themes continue to this day that are relevant in contemporary society.
Yes.
What wasn't relevant was the language in the letters. A lot of it, other than if you're sensitive to F-bombs, do not see this
film. Oh, yeah, right.
But,
Mary, I've got three pages.
Of F-bombs?
And I thought maybe when we get to our podcast, I might do a few, and I'll, of course, blank out the right, particularly the F-bombs.
But there were words that we wouldn't consider to be curse words today. And in fact, in an interview with the director, Thea Sherrick, she actually said that about 80% of the letters are the true letters that were written. And so we're actually hearing from the era the letters that were written, which were actually kind of funny. And the bigger theme, I thought, was, you know, this took place in an era where you had to physically write a letter, put it in an envelope, address it, put a stamp on it, and mail it. And we have poison pen, if you will, still in our culture today. And it's more ubiquitous and more anonymous because it can happen digitally now and it can spread like wildfire now. Yep. And this was a small seaside village where, because of how closely people lived together and how everything was everybody else's business and it was hard to keep secrets, all of, you know, who's receiving letters and what they say and the accusations in them, everybody knows about it as well in this small town, even without the digital technology we have today. And so I did think there were big themes.
Well, they were. And there's so many, as you described them, that it really doesn't concentrate on anyone in particular, other than, I think, the role of women. Mentioning that calligraphy, they couldn't use it in the legal sense, that they couldn't bring in penmanship.
No,
which
they
would
could not.
Seem to me and to us the first thing you do.
Right. And handwriting analysis.
Yeah.
They couldn't compare any handwriting in the court case.
Which, though, eventually becomes a part of the story, doesn't it?
It did. But what actually happens is the use of invisible ink. And that really did happen in the real Little Hampton letters scandal.
That's great. Yes.
So they did borrow heavily from what really happened, including the resolution. Certainly in any dramatic interpretation, liberties were taken.
Yeah. And for me, and I'm not a swearer, now and then I have a swear word or so on, and I'm not particularly fond of swearing, but I did find it intriguing. Johnny Sweets, the writer here,
yes.
And I found it, some of it ingenious. And it makes it even better when Olivia Colman eventually does it.
Yeah.
Because she just does not appear to be anybody who...
It's actually a very funny scene that I think you're referring to is when... So Edith and Rose have had a falling out. These poison pen letters are originally targeting Edith and her family. They spread to targeting other people in the community. And Rose is the prime suspect, if you will. And they actually confront each other on the street. And Rose criticizes Edith's level of cursing. And Edith says, well, how would you say it? And so Rose responds how she would say it. And then Edith responds in kind. And Rose compliments her that was much better. It's a very funny, charming scene.
Well, there's not much that's subtle here. One of the subtler parts of this film that I really liked was the relationship between the two of them. They're next-door neighbors. And anybody who has a next-door neighbor knows that that's a very delicate situation.
Well, and in this case, and it was true in Little Hampton, is they live in really small apartments that are literally... There is no space, just except a wall, row upon row upon row of neighbors.
Yes.
And they have to share a literal galvanized bathtub back and forth to take a bath. In real life, they had a common garden, which apparently is where the falling out in their friendship actually occurred. So they have to share a lot of resources, an outhouse, to live in these circumstances. So yeah, it's very hard to have privacy.
Well, Mary, as we're talking about Wicked Little Letters, some people are going to be going to this thinking it's a Brit whodunit. Was that accurate?
It's marketed somewhat that way.
It is, yes.
But I don't think there's much mystery as you're watching the story unfold. The bigger mystery is how do they catch her? And the antics surrounding that are quite funny. And I wish there would have been more of the antics surrounding the trying to catch who did it.
As you look at it, don't think that you are going to be doing a Agatha Christie kind of, it looks like it. It starts almost like that, a Knives Out kind of thing too. And it just isn't. Because no. You know, as you said, you know within a half an hour who wrote the letters.
Yes.
At least you got a pretty good idea.
Yes.
And it goes on from there. So it really isn't. The joy for me is all that's Brit.
and Brit, 1920s Brit.
1920s, yeah. And the themes that we talked about. And so it is a light film that can, if you think more about it, has some heavy duties. Now, you have two of your friends that went with you.
I did.
And what
Beth
did they
and
think?
Tom.
Beth and
they
Tom.
They enjoyed it. Yeah, it's an enjoyable
right.
trip to the theater, but I would say they felt it underachieved, as I did.
I like that word. It could have been much more, but then if it got to be much more, it may have been thematically too heavy. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I would have, if I were the filmmaker, and this is no offense to Johnny Sweet's script or
yeah.
Thea Sherrick's directing,
right.
I would have taken it more in the farcical direction as opposed to farce and these really heavy themes.
And that is some of the criticism of the film, is that it couldn't make up its mind. Thea
exactly.
couldn't make up her mind which way she wanted to go. And my daughter's name is Thea, so she got right around to Dad, you had a director named Thea.
Yes. Yes.
As we look at that British history and so on, I listed some to this, or in some way or another, that what I liked about British comedy. And there's a lot of, I think most people know about the Carry On series that went, must have been 30 or 40 years ago. Carry
that
On Somebody, yes.
This, well before my time.
Well, it was.
Theater goer.
If you're not, you have heard, I'm sure, we all hear about the Carry On series.
Yes. And
now, recently, both of our ladies were in The Favourite.
They were. And The
That's
Last
right,
Daughter.
Right,
yeah,
right.
They actually
right.
played the same character.
They did, yeah.
Jesse Buckley played the younger version, and Olivia Colman played the older version. And the two actresses are actually good friends in real life.
Oh, are
I've
they?
Heard many of their interviews together.
Oh, great.
And part of the reason I think both of them accepted it, beyond the script and the fact that they were fascinated by the true story, is the opportunity to work together.
Excellent.
And I think that adds to what we see from them in terms of Edith and Rose and the interactions that they have.
Yeah.
So it added a depth to it. Even though there aren't a lot of scenes of Rose and Edith as friends, there's the one scene in the street that we talked
yeah.
about of the Rose teaching Edith how to curse better.
Yeah.
And there's also a really lovely scene at the end after the court cases
yes.
where they cross paths with each other and have a moment to
yes.
talk.
Yes, yes. And,
so,
and you know, they began being close in a sense. I think that Olivia Colman's character wanted to befriend her, and then somehow it went bad. Well, the letters would turn it bad if you thought that was your neighbor doing that.
You sense the reason Edith is so fascinated by Rose is because Rose represents freedom.
She's the polar opposite.
She's the polar opposite. Rose has agency, even though she's in a very restrictive society that judges her harshly. She has agency over herself and her life, as opposed to Edith, who's in this very repressed situation and wants to be free. And so when these letters start arriving, it brings great attention and sympathy to Edith and the potential for her to break out and have some freedom and agency. So you can see why it develops the way that it does.
And Olivia Colman, of course, has won the Oscar. And
she
I think
has.
Jessie has been nominated.
She has.
I first saw her in
Wild Rose. Which we reviewed.
Yes, which we reviewed.
Yeah.
And I just fell in love with her as an actress. She was just outstanding.
And she was in Women Talking, which we also reviewed.
Yes, thank you. Yeah.
And she was on a Masterpiece Theater, The Woman in White, which is where I actually first saw her before Wild Rose.
Yeah.
So she's a fantastic Irish actress, and she has a wonderful singing voice to boot.
Oh.
But she doesn't get to sing in this.
No, she doesn't. But when she plays the country western in Wild Rose, I just is going, wow, this is some actress.
Yeah.
And she continues on. Then most people know about the Monty Python
yes.
series, okay, which is really kind of goofy Brit.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, just playing way off.
I'm more of the full Monty,
there you
Calendar
go.
Girls, Kinky Boots.
Yes.
Humor.
Good.
With regards to Brit comedies.
Yeah, very good. One that I've really liked, and I can't think of the other person's name, but Steve Coogan in The Trip. They have three or four of the trips that they took in all the way through Italy and, mm-hmm. and Europe mainly. Very witty stuff. And in fact, they were playing, I think Coogan plays a food critic.
Okay.
And so he's able to write back about it, and they stop at some very, very interesting places to eat.
Well, I need to watch this film because I'm getting hungry just listening to you talk about being in Italy and being a food critic.
Oh, I know. You didn't say that about England, though.
I did not, nor would I. Sorry, England.
I think they've gotten better. I always eat in the pubs because I just can't find a place that worked for me. And a full Monty is a very good example of a combination of Brit wit and just musicality.
Well, and Love Actually, you've got that whole genre.
Oh, thank you. It's a really good one.
Yeah, really funny. Bridget Jones' Diary.
Yes, yes. Going way, way back, and a classic take, which they usually don't do, the Tom Jones.
Oh, yeah.
So they're ones that have that combination where they're just not really goofy or they're not too serious. Notting Hill.
Yes. I would put that in the Love Actually, Bridget Jones era. Yeah. Yes.
There's one with Colin Farrell and Brendan
Gleeson. Gleeson.
In Bruges.
Yes.
Hey, did you ever see that?
I did, a long time ago.
Oh, I love that. These two crooks waiting for their orders, like waiting for Godot. This is in Bruges. And they are just really good. That's one of the ones that turned me around to say Colin Farrell isn't
well,
a good
they
actor.
Were reunited last
Thank
year,
you.
The year before last,
yes.
in the Banshees of Inisherin, which... I saw that with friends, and they did not find the humor in it that I did.
Oh.
But I found it to be very funny, and the overarching theme in that of war is ridiculous. I just thought it was brilliant.
Oh, good one. What they do, which probably in our film today, in Wicked Little Letters, isn't quite able to pull off, is the tragedy comedy. And I first noted that when Fraser's character cuts his finger. And threatens that he will cut every one of his fingers more that... I mean, just a completely unusual situation.
Yes.
Where somebody who's been best friends, the one decides, I don't want to be best friends anymore.
Yeah. And that's where I think this film struggled in terms of Wicked Little Letters. The relationship between Edith and Rose, we come to know. But I felt the depth of all the characters... wasn't sufficient, especially those two.
Yes.
So that you understand immediately and have empathy for either Rose and or Edith and their situation and their lost friendship. That's where I thought this film could have done better. And I also think the one-dimensional nature of the supporting cast, which is a fantastic supporting cast.
And one of its weaknesses is there's too many good...
There's so many good actors and actresses. We mentioned Gemma Jones and Timothy Spall. We didn't mention Eileen Atkins, the actress who plays Gladys Moss, WPO Moss.
Yes, right, yes.
Is new to me, but I thought she was fantastic. But
her name is Gladys. Gladys. Well, it's Anjana Vasan.
Vasan. She was fantastic, but... The supporting cast, I didn't feel, was given enough to do.
Oh, definitely not.
And so they were somewhat one note, and I wanted more of this to be more of an ensemble story. Yeah. It just felt like it should have been, wasn't.
I think your attitude toward your friends and yourself, and probably me too, was don't expect too much.
Don't expect
just
too much.
Just be amused.
Go for the ride. and I actually heard Olivia Colman describe it in an interview. It's a light, fun trip to the theater.
Good for her, good for her.
And it is light and it is fun.
And I think that some people would recognize the Brit nature of Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Yes.
You know, and that's be a more popular one. Some of the ones we're talking about here, they don't know much about. And one that I liked, and usually I don't like things that are too goofy, but I like Shaun of the Dead.
I'm shocked.
I know. But again, very great cast.
Right. And when you see great actors having fun and playing with their roles and with the script and the language that they're being given to say, it's it's a thrill ride. And you do get to see that between Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley and the other actors that we mentioned. And so that makes it fun as well.
You know, and as we're talking about so many good actors, the best exotic Marigold Hotel.
Ah, yes. The second best.
Right. Thank you.
The second best exotic Marigold Hotel.
Yeah. And that's filled with just super actors and a very light film. And I think that's the first time that we see Dev Patel.
I think so.
Yeah.
You are correct. Yeah. And with acting with some legends.
Bill Nighy and,
Yeah. Maggie Smith. There's so many dames. Yeah, I'm not sure which one you're referring to.
No, I know. One recently, Triangle of Sadness, which was Oscar nominated.
It was Oscar nominated.
Yeah.
But I didn't see it.
Yeah. There's a really, as it lampoons the upper class people on the boat, and you have some vomiting going on. It's just really obnoxious but funny. There are things there that are both silly and sublime.
I did see Triangle of Sadness.
All right.
Because you made me.
All right. I thought so.
That is has the air of ridiculousness about it.
Yes, it does. It does. And yet some heavy-duty themes.
Yeah.
As you think of the class warfare.
So in terms of period pieces that I found so enjoyable. One of the first films that I saw with Polly Walker and others was Enchanted April.
Ooh, no, I don't know that.
Which goes way back into the 90s and is just a lovely rom-com. Also about the role of women in society and have an agency over their relationships. And very enjoyable film with an all-star ensemble cast as well.
Mary Rena, I think we've exhausted the comedic possibilities of this film.
Without saying one curse word.
Without that, right, though. And if you're into the use of language, Wicked Little Letters does have some interest for word people.
Absolutely. Well, and it's an interesting reflection of the evolution of language coming out of the Great War. For the Great War, it wasn't common for men or women, except men in private clubs, to speak with such a colorful veracity. And coming out of the Great War, not only were men more commonly speaking that way, but it did infiltrate women's language as well. It just wasn't socially acceptable. And so it's an interesting period comedy to look at that evolution.
And even today, to hear two supreme actresses spit out some of those blue words is very funny. So Mary Rena, you have people out there who take us very seriously on our movies and our recommendations. They still might be a little bit confused about this film for their family, so talk to me.
It's not a family film. I would not take young children to this film unless you want to hear some very colorful language from your parroting children. It's an enjoyable, fun, light, as you said, don't take it too seriously, trip to the theater. And with this all-star cast, it's worth seeing.
And you know, Mary, if I had some teenage kids now, of course, I was way too liberal. I would take my kids to see anything. But if you had some that would want to know, what is a European film? What does a British film look like? This would be a good one because they would, of course, get a kick out of the language. You know, that mom and dad actually took them to a film.
That is true. They would be shocked.
They would be shocked. But it would be a delightful way of connecting with them. And I think in the end, it wouldn't hurt them at all to see it if they wanted.
Well, and there could be some children who decide to take their parents to this, as I took my mom to a George Carlin concert in Las Vegas.
Didn't even mention him in his seven words.
We did not, and nor will we.
Right,
because there's still seven words you can't say.
Yeah, I know.
But he had gotten much more blue and raunchy later on in his career. And I remember my mom was sitting between my sister and I just laughing hysterically. And my sister and I were looking at each other like, okay, mom's laughing. Is it appropriate for us to be laughing at this stuff? Because it was very raunchy. So this could have the opposite effect too. You could have children taking their parents to see this and the children feeling a sense of embarrassment that their parents might be laughing a little bit too much at this.
Point,
so it could go either way, depending on where you are on the age spectrum.
And I think you mentioned it way back in It's Movie Time. There's a certain, we're no longer writing letters in the sense that most people are not, and how the joy of being able to hold it in your hand, look at it, review it. There's just a difference. You know?
It is different. So maybe people should take a little time out and write a letter once in a while of the non-poison kind.